Hello, I'm Phil Dobby. Welcome to B-Talk. Today, presentations. We all have to give them from time to time, but do we do a good job?
B-Talk.
Well, today, how do you make your presentations more pointed? We've all sat through PowerPoint slides where the speaker has been dull, long-winded and boring. But have you ever thought maybe people say the same thing about you? So to help us all brush up on our presentation techniques, I'm joined by Paul Hellman from ExpressPotential.com. Paul is an author, a columnist and a TV and radio commentator in the United States. Now, I came across his 10 tips to sharpen your message on his blog, so I thought it'd be useful to go through those. Now, Paul, number one, practice makes perfect.
Yes, and I think we all realize that practice does make perfect. When I'm doing presentation skills programs, one of the things I ask people is, have you ever cooked pancakes? Sounds like a little bit of a strange question. Mm. But for anybody that has cooked up pancakes, you then ask, well, what do you do with the first one? And people will say, well, if I'm really hungry, I eat it. But then they'll admit the first pancake is never as good as the second, and the second is usually not as good as the third. And presentations, I believe, work pretty much the same way. They just get better and better and better. It's really not uncommon, for example, on an opening to practice that maybe 10 times, 20 times. I always tell people I should be able to come into your bedroom in the middle of the night and wake you up out of a sound sleep, and you should be able to stand up and give your opening.
Well, you can get yourself into a lot of trouble doing that. You do realize. But I guess the pancake analogy, I like that, because like a pancake, the more you practice, the better you can raise your skill level. It'll be a brave man who tries to flip a pancake the first time they've made one. But you get more adept at it, and I guess it's the same with presentations, isn't it?
Well, I think you're making a good point, and the way I would say that is the practice is working on two different levels. On one level, practice generically is just raising your skill level in general. And then, of course, practice on a specific talk is going to make that talk better and better and better. Mm.
Yeah. Now, number two is you've said to answer six critical questions about your audience. Now, you're saying there's six common questions, or should we be looking at asking questions specific to the audience we're talking to?
Well, I think there's no magic to the number six, but the real point here is you ought to know something about your audience. It's just a little bit like if someone was coming to your house for dinner, you ought to know something about who they are and if they have any food allergies and so forth. With audiences, we need to know some really basic things, and you'd be surprised how sometimes people skimp on this. But the main question you really, really, really want to know about your audience is a complicated one, and that is, what is it that they're going to get from this? What's in it for them? What's the benefit? I think this word presentation is very interesting. If you look at the root of it, it is present. So what's the present? What's the gift? And let's say, Phil, that you were, let's say that you were having a birthday party, and you and I have this lovely conversation today, and you say, Paul, I'd love you to come to my birthday party. And I don't really know you. I'm going to buy a present, though, but I'm going to walk in. I'm going to walk into your party feeling a little bit anxious. I'll be thinking, did I buy him something that he even wants? Mm. Whereas if I know you really well, I can get you something that I know is valuable, and then I'm going to walk in with a lot of excitement because I know you're going to be really pleased with this. You can walk into a presentation in either of those modes, either with a sense of trepidation, almost embarrassment because you don't really think what you have is of value, or the exact opposite. So being really clear, what does the audience get?
Right, okay, and I guess that helps with your third point as well. If you understand what the audience wants, then it's easier for you to make your points clear and concise.
Well, I think you do have to be concise. In fact, I'm just writing a blog about that. And, in writing this blog this morning, I was thinking about Ernest Hemingway, who always counseled, use short sentences, use simple words, and use few of them. And I think that's good advice when you're writing. It's good advice when you're speaking. And part of this is, to be very, very clear, what is your main message in 10 words or less? So you could talk for two hours or 2 days, but in either event, you ought to know what is the single most important thing that I want my audience to remember. Because the truth of it is that a day after anybody speaks about anything, your audience is going to forget probably 80-90% or more. Mm. So you have to figure out what's the single most important thing that a day later, 2 days later, I really, really, really want them to remember. And the shorter that thing is, the more likelihood it's going to stick.
Right. Now, the other key thing is the opening. You've got to win those first impressions, haven't you? So what's the key to a good opening?
Well, I think a presentation for a talk ought to be like an opening of a movie. And what I remember is when movies first started, they would be really boring when you watched the beginning. You'd see all these credits, and it would take a good 5 minutes to get past that and get into the film. Nowadays, you go to a film, and frequently it just starts right up, and then the credits roll around later. I think a good talk is like that. So I think what you want to do in all things presentation-related, to the extent possible and as appropriate, is to break people's expectations. So the typical thing is for someone to stand up and thank everybody and say who they are. But rather than that, it would be one powerful way to start a presentation is with a story. And so you could just say, it was Thursday night, and I was working late, and suddenly the phone rang. Who could it be? And you haven't even yet said your name or anything. You just go through the story, and of course you have to end the story with a point, and the point needs to be relevant. And then at the end of telling the short anecdote that captures people's attention because it's a little bit unexpected, you then say, and my name is blah, 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 and that's the reason we're here today, and the story has led to that.
Yeah, it's a bit like how you're taught to do a blockbusting novel, not that I've ever written one yet, anyway. But the argument is always start with the action, and then once you've sucked people in, you can go back and explain how you got there. So then, that makes a lot of sense. So getting the opening right is number four. The fifth one is you've said review your slides. Now, get rid of a lot of them, I guess is what you're saying, in other words.
You know, I do about 12 different programs. Some of them I use PowerPoint slides, some of them I use no PowerPoint slides. When I don't use PowerPoint slides, I've yet to find an audience that said, oh, this was a wonderful presentation, but we were so disappointed you didn't have any PowerPoint slides. The thing of it is that you and I and any human being is the main visual. And what's happened is we've gotten overly dependent on PowerPoint slides, and we've forgotten that. So we've known for a long time less is more, and that's certainly true when it's about PowerPoint slides. There's a very famous story told about Winston Churchill, who gave an incredible graduation speech. And of course, if you imagine that you're graduating and the speaker's going to be Winston Churchill, you'd be sitting on the edge of your chair. Anyway, he walks up to the podium and he looks at the audience, and here's what he says. He says, never, ever, 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 ever give up. Never give up. And then he sits down. Now, I imagine if you were in the audience that day, you were profoundly disappointed. He delivered this speech in no time flat. But I also bet that if you were in the audience that day, you remembered his speech for the rest of your life, and you probably told 100 people about it, and he was very clear about his main message.
Yeah, what he actually said was never, ever, ever, ever give up. You got to be able to do the Winston Churchill. A little bit disappointed there. Now, the next one is to use stories, which you've already alluded to. I mean, you've got to have that personal touch, haven't you?
Well, I've been doing keynote speeches and corporate workshops for 25 years, and there are a few surefire things that work, and nothing beats a good story. Now, the problem is, for someone listening to this, the immediate reaction is, yes, I know, stories are great, but I'm not a storyteller. So people need to, I think, get comfortable with this idea of what is a good story. And one of the surprising things that I always teach people about stories is they're everywhere, because anytime you have a problem in your work life or your non-work life, every problem, every time you are frustrated, surprised, disappointed, anxious, upset, story, 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 story. And we love to hear about people's problems as long as, again, you're concise about it, and as long as the problem ends up with a relevant learning point that's connected to the talk in general. So stories are really wonderful, and you can't really go through a day without encountering some story. The problem is that we don't recognize them as stories when we're confronting them. We think of them as problems.
Right. Okay, the next one sounds easier said than done. To appear confident. Now, this sounds like it could be a whole subject in itself, but maybe give us a couple of pointers. How can you appear confident when you're not?
Confidence is, we want to focus on confidence more as a set of behaviors than as a feeling. It's a little bit like let's smile, and if we smile, then maybe eventually we will feel happy. But if we wait for the feeling of happiness to show up before we smile, it may be a long time between smiles. Similarly, if you walk into a room and you act confident and you focus on confident behaviors, which would mean walking in with a certain decisiveness, it would mean not shuffling your papers, it would mean looking at your audience and smiling, it might mean pausing for a second or two before you say anything. These are confident looking behaviors, and if you, and it also, an easy one, stand up as tall as you can. Not only will you, if you stand up as tall as you can, straight as you can, not only will you look better to the audience, but there'll be a nice feedback loop going internally to your brain as well.
Mm. So you've won them over. You've won them over even before you've started your presentation, really, haven't you, on that basis?
Yeah, you walk in tall and you straight, and you don't hesitate, and you smile at people, and you say, good morning, and you go right into your opening, which you've practiced, and you go as if you're on a tear. And off you go. And then you just keep doing it. You do it, and confidence eventually comes.
Right, okay. Now, that confidence can take a bit of a knock, of course, if you get those difficult questions, which relates to your next point. How do you anticipate those awkward questions, and how do you deal with them?
Well, there are two things there. One is the anticipation, and the other is the dealing. Well, let's talk about the anticipation. So it's a very good preparation exercise to think about, okay, what would be the nightmare questions that would just send a chill up and down my spine, and to come up with six or ten, and then rehearse them. Now, here's the thing. Probably your six or ten questions are never going to be asked. This is just like going on an interview, job interview. Mm. You would rehearse questions, and probably they never get asked, but the act of rehearsing does the trick. It injects some confidence so that you walk in feeling better about it. When a question is actually asked, there are a couple of interesting techniques here. And here's a real simple one that, by the way, also it's a good behavioral way to project confidence. That is, you're asked a question. First thing that you do, keep your hands down by your sides and take one step forward. Now, that sounds perhaps a little bit strange, but think about what a lot of presenters do. It's the exact opposite. They take a step back. So every time you step away from your audience, what are you projecting? You're projecting, I'm a little bit afraid of you. Mm. That's what your body's saying.
You might as well go, whoa, at the same time.
Yeah, get me the hell out of here is basically what you're saying. And then keeping your hands on your sides, the opposite of that would, of course, be to cross your arms across your chest, which looks defensive and closed. So part of answering a question is the body language of answering a question. Now, the second thing about answering a question is, and this is usually quite comforting for people to discover, you have options. And what I mean by that is, you give a presentation, you don't have to know all the answers. Yes, you have to be prepared, but you don't have to know everything. In fact, in the States, if somebody knows everything, we have a very derogatory term for that. We call that person a know-it-all, and that's not complimentary. So if you're giving a presentation, it's fine not to know certain things. If you ask me a question and I don't know it, I can simply say this. I can say, you know, that's a very, very, that's a serious question, and I would like to give that some serious thought. Would it be okay if I get back to you by end of day Friday? Now, you're a reasonable person. What are you going to say? No, that's not okay. So now I've made a commitment to you. I've actually done a couple things. Number one is I've said I'm a serious person. I'm going to do some research on your question, and I've made you a promise. And if I keep my promise and I do get back to you by end of day Friday, then you're going to say, oh, this guy, Paul Hellman, he really does what he says he does. And in fact, I've increased my influence with you, and I've certainly increased it beyond what I would have done if I had just bluffed through an answer.
Right, and it's a great excuse to get back in touch with someone as well, which, you know, people always like the follow-up to a presentation. Now, number nine, you've said variety and animation, and I can see why these are two different things, because an animated presenter who's just animated all the time, that can get as tedious as someone who's just a bit of a plodder in their presentation style, can't it?
Well, that's absolutely right. And so the real trick here is variation. And people will say talk loudly, which again is another way of asserting confidence, projecting confidence, is to speak a little bit louder than you think you need to. I will frequently, in working with people, ask them on a 1 to 10 scale, if 1 is low and 10 is high, how loud do you think your volume is? A lot of people have a hard time sensing accurately what their volume really is. So you want to speak a little bit louder, but you don't need to be screaming, nor do you need to be speaking at the same volume throughout. The trick here is vocal variety. So you're speaking loudly. Every once in a while, you might whisper, but I probably wouldn't do that more than once. You would want to vary your pitch. You would want to speak really fast, and then you would want to pause. Pauses can be really interesting. You want to move around, and then you want to be still. And it's the punctuation of movement, and then stillness, and then movement that's interesting. So if you were just hyper-caffeinated and going off the charts in terms of being dynamic, you'd be pacing up and down like a tiger. You don't want that. You want movement punctuated by stillness. In all these things, you want variety.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll bear that in mind. And finally, you've said to identify your strengths and weaknesses as a presenter. Now, sometimes we can get that wrong, can't we? We might think that we're the best presenter in the world, and actually we're not, and we can learn that from bitter experience. Or we might actually think we're not very good, but actually we're not that bad.
Well, I think very much it's the second than the first. So again, when I work with people, one of the things that they walk away with is this drill that every time you give a presentation, the first thing you need to do immediately afterwards is a self-critique. But by critique, what I mean is, first up, what are three things that you did well? And then secondly, what are three things you could do better? And once you're clear on, here are the three things I did well, here are the three things I can do better, you're done. That's it. And it's the same thing if people watch themselves on video. Three things you did well, three things you could do better, done. And if you follow that, and if you were to do that for every single presentation, you would get better and better and better, and you would get more and more confident, and you'd be out there presenting.
Right, okay. But what about you, Paul, then? What are your weaknesses? What do you feel like you need to brush up on?
Oh, what an interesting question.
Hey, you mean you didn't anticipate this question?
Well, you know what? I'm going to give that some thought. Would it be okay if I called you back by end of day Friday?
Oh, no, I think that's probably quite reasonable, I guess. But it's an interesting
topic.
That's
a serious question that requires some serious study.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you very much. I've appreciated it. 10 good pointers. Thanks very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much, Phil.
I think I might have caught him out a little bit there at the end. I always hate answering questions. That question, what are you bad at? It's such a long list in my case. Maybe it's down to a poor education. What a segue! We look at education in the next edition of B-Talk.
Certainly a lot of kids are going to be moving through the system, which means we're going to be spending more taxes. Already, education, from a federal sense, is the third highest portfolio area after health and income support.
As the Australian government pushes for a national curriculum and Kevin Rudd harps on about the education revolution, just how much needs to change in the education sector? I talked to social researcher Mark McCrindle about that very topic in the next B-Talk. I'll see you then for that. For bnet.com, I'm Phil Dobby. Thanks for listening.